So, we're in about the middle of this. Well, we're past the middle, actually. And we're now in the chapter called More Questions. So the questions just go on and on. Mahamati and Buddha just keep on talking and talking and getting closer and closer to the bone of it. So I think we're on 171. Does that sound right to you? About we did the mother, and the strange thing about desire is the mother and ignorance is the father, and they are to be abandoned. So the next, it's 59. It's mostly about the one path of realization. No, 9 is about the definition of Buddhahood, which reinterprets the Four Noble Truths. it talks about a Buddha's awareness, that realizing that there's no self, which is the crux of it, realizing there's no self in any beings or things, that understanding the passion and knowledge obstruct our Buddha knowledge, transcending two kinds of death, karma and transformation, cause and effect and transformation, putting an end to two kinds of affliction, and what they cause. One senses attachment arises from all of these things. So, realizing our attachment, we can see that there's no need for a self. And it's really connected to the Four Noble Truths, that Buddha said there is no self. But the logic of this is, if there's no self, there's no self to suffer, which is the Second Noble Truth. And if there's no obstruction, then there's no cause of suffering. And if there's no death, no cess, there won't be any end of suffering. And if there's no affliction, no path leading to the cessation of suffering, which is based on our senses and what they give rise to, then there's no self. And that creates an awareness, a Buddha awareness, they call it, that breaks our attachment to things and our belief in things. And so it goes on in the next one to talk about what a Buddha self is. What is Buddha's self? And it's very simple. It's two things. It's a uniformity of speech, voices, teachings, bodies, syllables, everything that we experience as beings, not a uniformity of those things, which, so there's just one Buddha way, just one Buddha mind, but it appears in every kind of form, it says, including, it says, parrots and elephants, which I like very much. That's great. So if you see an elephant, it's got a Buddha mind there somewhere. And to each other also. So then Mahamati presses on to ask why the Bhagavan, Buddha, did proclaim to this assembly that I am all Buddhas of the past. Why, in telling the hundreds of thousands of tales about his previous life, did he say, I was once a king, a six-tucked elephant, a parrot, Chakra, Sinatra? Buddha told Mahamati, it's because of the four uniformities. I was once this kind of Buddha and that kind of Buddha, Kanaka Muni, Kayashapa, and the four are what I just said, uniformity of syllables, uniformity of bodies. So whatever syllables are used in calling me a Buddha, those syllables are also used in calling all Tathagatas and Buddhas. The essential nature of syllables doesn't differ. And so all of the things don't differ in that sense, including the uniformity of teachings. Teachings regarding the elements of awareness attained by myself and other Buddhas. We speak the Dharma with unobstructed wisdom. So then the Buddha made a proclamation to the assembly. Kashapa, Krakachanda, Kanakumuni, well was I as well. By means of these four uniformities, I teach all bodhisattvas. And we feel that, I think. We're so caught by the differences, the way our mind works, and our sort of animal mind. I watch my cat, and she goes around and smells everything every morning, just checking everything out. So curious. Is this? What is this? What is that? And some new thing comes in, and she's fascinated. And I think, my gosh, I do that too, all the time. We're like that. We're always sort of holding on or taking on interest in things as part of our fun as human beings, that sometimes we lose the sense of our uniformity, which is our Buddha nature, that underneath it's the same. And so we can meet all things within that uniformity, even though we're all so different. And that's the Buddha way, to accept differences, you could say, because of the uniformity, because of the truth of the uniformity of the Buddha mind. So then Mahamati catches Buddha on it with a question about what he said one time, which is what people do with teachers. Do you remember what you said 2 years ago about it? I think, well, no, I don't remember. But he said, Buddha, you said, from the night I attain perfect enlightenment until the night I enter nirvana, between the two I do not speak, nor have I spoken, nor will I speak a single word, for not speaking is how a Buddha speaks. He says, Bhagavan, why does the Tathagata, the Arhat, the fully enlightened one, say not speaking is how a Buddha speaks? And the Buddha said, it's because of two truths that I make such a statement as this. And which two? They are the truth that depends on personal realization and the ever-present truth. These are the two. So the personal realization, and there's no comma there, but there should be, and the ever-present truth. So it's saying the same thing again, that the universality, the ever-present universality, and then the personal realization, which is individual. It's because of these two truths that I make such a statement. The truth that depends on personal realization is whatever other Tathagatas realize, I also realize, nothing more, nothing less. But the ultimate realm of the truth that depends on personal realization is beyond explanations or distinctions and beyond dualistic terms. The ever-present truth refers to the way of the ancient sages. The Dharma realm is ever-present. Like the nature of gold or silver. Whether a Tathagata appears in the world or does not appear in the world, the Dharma realm is ever present. It's like a road that leads to a city. A man walking in the wilderness sees this straight and level road leading toward an ancient city and follows it to that city where he enjoys whatever he desires. Mahamati, what do you think? Did he make the road or that city's delight? Mahamati answers, no. The Buddha told him, the ever-present Dharma realm of myself and all Buddhas of the past is also like this. This is the reason I say that from the night of my enlightenment until I enter nirvana, between the two I do not speak, nor have I spoken, nor will I speak a single word. So there's time for just some discussion, some questions. There's a wonderful glossary in the back of this book. If you want to know the meaning of words, it's all spelled out in here and very, very nicely. It's a very convenient resource. And there are only 100 pages left. So, comments? Donna Lynn?
Russell's probably weren't around yet to be included in, included in as being in the nature. So in the koan list, does a dog have to be in nature? If we know from the sutras that Buddha had always said that the So this koan is pointing to something else. Yes.
Well, there are two koans, and they're identical except the answer is different. In one of the koans, he's asked, does a dog have Buddha nature? And he says, no. Mu. And in the other one, he says, yes. So that's also pointing to this two truths that is being pointed out here. That in one sense, dog is a dog, and just a dog. But on another level, that dog is Buddha nature. So that's the change that Dogen brought, not even to say has Buddha nature, but is Buddha nature.
And that includes reminding rocks and ground and rain.
Yes,
and
yes. Yes, there's no separation. There's no way to pull things apart. They're all of a piece. But we do pull it apart in our minds, and that's what this is pointing out all the way through, that we keep using our mind to create the separations and therefore the struggles that we go through because we don't understand the uniformity that is the non-separation truth of us. And so sitting is what brings us into that, into sync with the uniformity, you could say, that we drop our individuality when we sit. It's not that we reconnect, because it's always, but we don't always pay attention. So we bring our attention into the wholeness of it, the individuality and the uniformity, both together.